Hey, you're listening to District Conversations. In this episode, our editor, Eric Davidson, sits down with Dublin-based singer-songwriter, Loa. Over the next 20 minutes, she touches upon the current Irish creative landscape, the inspiration for her latest EP, This Heart, ancestral memories of her Sierra Leonean heritage, and gigging abroad at Austin, Texas's South by Southwest.
Okay, cool. So I'm joined in the studio by Loa.
Hello.
We're gonna chat today for about half an hour. So just to start, I was sort of proud of myself when I came up this way of describing your music, and tell me if I'm completely wrong with this, but I was like, it's like a mixture between Jeff Buckley and Nina Simone.
Oh, on the nose. Yes. Oh my god. Yes. Oh, I'm so feel so warm and fuzzy inside. I love Jeff Buckley so much, and one of the greatest compliments I've ever been given is that occasionally we sound similar because we have a similar range. His is actually way bigger than mine, and obviously Nina Simone, the soul and the depth and intensity of it. Oh my goodness.
Okay,
yeah,
cool. I'm happy with that then.
That's wow. Yeah. Wow, Eric, this is a great start.
Yeah, okay, now to move completely. Yeah. that was just it
to get
to
me
schmooze.
Yeah, schmooze, butter me up. Yeah, so give me good info.
Yeah, I read an interview a while ago that you were talking about Irish people's inherent self-deprecation and that idea. So I feel like self-deprecation can be sort of healthy sometimes, but it's only when it turns into sort of begrudgery that it becomes, you know, an issue. Why do you think it's so knitted in Irish people, that sort of idea?
Well, I think one thing I observe in a lot of groups who are who've experienced like consistent and long-standing oppression is a dark sense of humor. You know, like Jewish people are so fabled for their humor, and it's so dark and witty and gripping, and I do think that is perhaps something that the self-deprecation comes from, a place of knowing how dark things can go and the dark depth of the human soul. And so it's a sort of, it can be a humbling thing, knowing, you know, like we're not necessarily chosen or special. Humans aren't, like, any for any group at any time. You could be either sailing on top of the world or at the lowest level of the rung. So it's a way of just reminding you of your own humanity and insignificance in the grand scheme of the universe. And that can be very grounding and actually very freeing and liberating, because you're like, you know, I don't have to prove anything. We can just be here together and just enjoy our short life and be grateful for the good things that come. But it can really easily slip into a very dark, depressive, almost self-hate, you know. It's a fine line, and humor helps us bridge that line, I think. But it's a darkness, but that's where we get our poetry from and stuff. So, you know, it's kind of a blessing and a curse. Yeah, it's grim and beautiful, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think people are sort of coming around to that. There's less resentfulness towards people's success in Ireland at the moment. It seems to be coming around a little bit more. Would you agree with that? And if you do, what do you think is that owed to?
That's a really good question. I don't know. Perhaps it's the recession, you know. Everyone was, most of our society was plunged into a state of complete uncertainty, and a lot of hierarchies that were very quickly developing were flattened completely. We've been forced to kind of recreate what we consider to be our sense of community and what actually ties us together, and probably realize that when we're all supporting each other, we do a lot better than when, like, this sort of fake sense of success that was driven by borrowed money. We're like, okay guys, let's rethink this whole attitude to ourselves, our community, who we are as a people, and probably we can get a lot further by supporting each other's creativity and really building things that are real, as opposed to attaching our identity to fake news materials, you know. So perhaps, I think often misfortune can foster a greater sense of community. I'd like to think so. We probably won't get a clear answer to that for another 20 years when you look back on a generation. But
it's
certainly
in the moment,
exactly, to analyze it, but it's certainly a great time to be working in art.
We've spoken about that with various different types of artists, talking about, you know, when things are tough, it sort of breeds a massive amount of creativity. But I always come back to the question being like, is it worth the depression of it?
Yeah.
To breed that creativity, or, you know, that's always the sort of eternal sort of battle I always feel when we're talking to artists.
Yeah, because it's all very well to be like, oh yeah, this misery is glorious for art, but like it's misery because it's misery, and people are losing their homes and they can't, you know, they can't pay their rent, they can't feed their kids. Like, where's that line of you know, we need to survive as a people, and also we need to be inspired. And I don't entirely think that you have to be in complete abject misery to create. Like, that's also a very glorified idea about creativity. And actually what you really find when you dig a bit deeper is most creatives who are doing well are very well supported, you know, and they have the support of a financial, emotional, community support. And very few, rare occasions when an artist has come from, like, you know, a crack house and turned successful. That, and we're obsessed with those stories because they give us hope. But by and large, generally, it's better to be in a comfortable society.
And you're probably only seeing them because they're the ones that are put on the pedestal.
Exactly, because they're so unusual and fascinating. Because the resilience of spirit is really amazing. But to think that should be applied to everyone is unfair.
Absolutely. You touched briefly there on sort of where you get inspiration from, but did I read that this EP sort of relates to intuition? That's the
Women's intuition. I've definitely spent a long portion of my kind of 20s like very insecure and questioning and trying to figure out my place in the world and probably ignoring a lot of instincts. And I think the way I see it is like my particular issue with following intuition and creating the life I'd like to live in so far as my circumstances allow, it's a very parallel experience for us as a society at large and as a species, you know, because we kind of ignore a lot of signs. Like we sort of are ignoring climate change and we're ignoring all these things. Like, it's probably kind of a serious issue. Like, I don't really know, you know, and it'd be grand. And like, that's the macro version of what's happening microscopically on each individual level. So I had a very much an intense spiritual journey of learning to listen to that really quiet, really still voice that says, do this, try this, and failing a lot for a lot of it, and being in toxic situations and you know, relationships and things like this, and then realizing I was just never going to be able to live comfortably and happily and give anything to the world if I kept ignoring, like, if you want to call it my purpose, or if you want to be romantic about it in that way, like, I just have to do it. And the more you say yes to those instincts, the more aligned you feel, the more you have to give to people, the more compassionate and generous I feel, and less resentful, and you know, all those darker things like envy or fear, they kind of start to dissolve because you're just on your journey and you've said yes to it. And it's definitely a wider thing, and it makes me inquire more as to what I say yes to, why, where I give my time and energy, and that's having a wider effect on me politically as an individual and how engaged I am in society, and as a member of my community.
So even if the intuition isn't necessarily it doesn't end up being the right thing to do, it just makes sense for you to follow that's like, because eventually it'll all sort of align.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the nature of intuition. Like Steve Jobs' talk that he gave at Stanford years ago was so incredible, because he talks about he'd already dropped out, but he was it Stanford? Yeah, and he went to calligraphy class for just no reason. He didn't know why. He was just drawn to go to calligraphy, and it seemed like the most bizarre thing, this college dropout spending all his time at calligraphy. I mean, it's ridiculous. If you'd met him at the time, you'd be like, dude, get your life together, you know. And lo and behold, and like, that's such a very dramatic example of what it is,
of course,
I'm referring to, that like, when you obey these tiny whimsical instincts, ultimately they when you look back, it seems really clear what the path was, but at the time you feel like scared to take that leap, but you have to.
You mentioned in a brief interview in Clash, I think it was Clash magazine, you were talking about ancestral intuition. So is that related to that? Is that, you know, is that lingering intuition? Is that part of what you're talking about now, or are they sort of like just different facets of intuition?
I suppose they're all connected, aren't they? Like, certainly if you're a black person in this day and age, you know, there's there's a lot of weight and history attached to that, and there are, they are discovering more and more in DNA research, which fascinates me, that there is DNA memory, and it doesn't seem that bizarre. I mean, our bodies just know to grow in a certain way, and they grow you into a black person, like, because, you know, your DNA said print more melanin, guys, you know, whatever it is. So it's not so surprising that there might be a case for, you know, memory, intuition, and this kind of thing. So certainly what you can find is, if as you become more conscious and engaged and in touch with yourself, in touch with your society at large, definitely I personally feel drawn to actions that might support my people, if you want to call it. I mean, we're all the same, but you know what I mean,
ancestrally
speaking, that, like, you know, whether, because I'm on one side descended from slaves and descended from people in the Caribbean, in West Africa, in Ireland, there's a lot going on there. And to think that you're just an individual that sprang into the universe with absolutely a clean slate, sorry, that's just not the case. Like, you're a victim and a subject of history, whether it's simply just politically at the time, but also potentially physically. So I do feel like some of these intuitions and instincts might be a means of furthering your species, as well as, like, furthering yourself in this lifetime. You might be, you know, a singular entity, but you're also part of a broader picture. Like, you know, think of, I don't know, Angela Davis, a great civil rights movement activist. You know, she was completely drawn to use her skills of communication to move forward a revolution, a system. And if she'd just been like, you know, I kind of just want to write poetry or whatever, like, it in the broader sense, she just was compelled, and thank God, you know.
And do you think it's healthy for people, even if they have a abhorrent ancestry, to explore something like that?
I think, yeah, you have to look yourself in the face, don't you? You just can't. We all have to, and it's hard to, you have to ask questions of ourselves now, of our history, of our ancestry. Go, what were they all doing? The more you know, the more you understand why things are the way they are today. So the more context you have for everything, the more you understand why things are run the way they are, where it definitely gives you a better sense of where you even fit into the picture, because sometimes feeling lost as a person in your life is potentially largely down to just not having enough information to work with, you know. And certainly the more you know, the more you kind of go, okay, I'm part of this incredible lineage that has some really dark, horrible parts and very beautiful, like, transformational times. And what am I going to give back to this? So I say that, but I'm still on that journey. I definitely don't feel like I know half of what I could know. But it does instill me with a greater sense of a little bit more purpose and sense of, I can hold myself in a certain way, knowing that this is the journey in history. And I'm here because of all these people that came for me.
It's exciting to think of all the different cultures that you mentioned there as part of your ancestry. It must be exciting to think that I haven't even scratch the surface, and what I can explore in terms of this.
Yeah, oh goodness, yeah. I mean, I could spend several lifetimes discovering it, I think, and I feel like there's no time. There's so much urgency. And so sometimes musically, because I guess we're all talking about this all in the context of music, really. Like, it can be challenging for me to refine my music, because I'm trying to squish it all into, like, every song and every, just say my piece. And at certain times, I do kind of go, oh, I wish it was just simple. I wish it was just one thing. But then I'm like, no, actually, no, I don't. And I think now I'm trying to be a bit more, allow life to make it a bit easier for me, rather than trying to fit it all into song. You know, maybe there's other ways I can express certain parts of, be interested in certain parts of my ancestry, or, you know, like, I'm doing some collaborations on Afrobeat at the moment, and that's allowing me to, like, really go into that, and I don't feel like I have to go up on stage and do half an hour of chaos just to feel like, here, that, guys, this is who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's multiple facets that it can take shape.
I suppose then, moving on a slightly, you played in Sepo Sao West this year. When was that? Was that in
March? Yeah.
I was over in Austin in October.
Okay.
And it's just like this proper oasis of liberalism in Texas. It's crazy. Did you enjoy the city, I suppose, to start off?
So much. It was beautiful. Yeah.
What was your sort of impression of that sort of aspect? I that was the thing that really stuck out to me. It's like, when you're in the airport, we transferred from, like, Dallas, and Dallas is just this, like, you know, pew pew pew.
Yeah, so Texas. Yeah. Yeah,
and then you're in Austin, and it's like effectively like being in New York or something.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is really like that. It's interesting. I feel like it's very sheltered. Mm-hmm. In Austin, in that sense of like it's a lot of the stereotypes we know about Texas. Particularly racially speaking, which one is concerned about as a non-American black person, it can be quite intense when you go there and you're like experiencing a lot of racism, and it's a very different society. Mm. And it, you know, you go, wow. So in I was a little bit like, you know, concerned, but in Austin, it was just absolutely totally grand, you know, and people are so chilled and interested and curious and cool and artistic. And I had some of the best times of my career there over the course of the week.
Where did you play?
We just played the two Irish shows in the Velveeta Room and BD Riley's pub.
Okay, cool.
But I went to a lot of workshops and met a lot of musicians, some really like, I was hanging out with very luckily some very kind of very established people in the industry, right. And just got getting to learn from them and see how, and it's crazy. It was very awakening. I was like, oh god, I need to do more work here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of us out there, you know, drudging away, and it's wonderful. But in order to really make a go of it, like, you've got to put in the hours, because there's some really hardworking people.
Put the fire under.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think that, I suppose, Arthur's Day and hardworking class heroes still has the potential to do it, but do you think there's a possibility of something like South by Southwest in Dublin? It's like the venues, I think one of the main things about South by Southwest is, you know, that you've got all these like small, really intimate venues that have a bit of a legacy in terms of music that are housing these like huge artists or small artists or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you think that I always feel that like Dublin has the potential to be a city like that because it's so close and that you could walk from, you know?
Yes, that's a really good point. I never thought of it like that, but yeah, I mean, like, yeah, Hard Working Class Heroes is a great example of that. Mm. Yeah, because it's so accessible and we have huge musical legacy in the city. And I mean, I guess a lot of it leaves, a lot of our musical sort of people have to leave the city. Mm. So other cities like Austin or whatever don't necessarily have that, like their legacy, it stays within the city realms. But certainly, yeah, I'm especially with how music is exploding, in terms of the variation of stuff that's coming out of Dublin, in 10, 15, 20 years, you know, it could be super exciting to have something like that on. Yeah.
How do you combat that exodus that you mentioned there?
Oh, I don't know if there's really a way. Yeah, the eternal question. I don't know. I mean, look, at the end of the day, there's only like 5 million on the island. Mm. Like, it's music by its nature, like, it's about sharing it with groups of people, and bards have always travelled, musicians have always travelled from the dawn of time, you know. So if, you know, you could sustain a career in Germany, 80 million people, you know, you could just travel around. It's a large landmass, but we're a small country and with a small population. And I'd love to say, oh, we should be able to do it all ourselves. Mm. But I don't know if that's entirely fair. And I think you do grow from going outside and widening your perspective.
It's not doing anyone justice to just stay here, just for the sake of staying here.
Yeah, for the sake of proving a point, you know, like, as long as Ireland has existed, there has been a lot of travelling and exodus back and forth. And I think to some extent it's healthy. It would be nice to feel a better sense of maybe initial financial support in those early days. And I think we could do a lot with, there's a lot of differences we could make that would make it easier on artists starting out. But in the long run, I think, yeah, travelling is just inevitable.
Okay, cool. I think that's all my questions.
Okay, yeah, great.
Thanks for joining me today, Laura.
And thank you for having me.